So this is the poem is for my dad. It's called In the Corn Maze. I wave you in and you follow, leaving behind rules in black and white. No smoking tops like life. Only one way in and one way out, with infinite chances to get lost in a crowd. Dancing faster than light, tempting the sun to cut in where we belong, with our long fingers and curved baby toes, stolen gourds tucked inside our coats, and the same defiance that nearly got us expelled from separate boarding schools in separate years, rising in our souls, reaching the seed of how it feels to be you. Before the first turn, before you feel eyes on your back and ears perked in our direction, that's just the corn peeking, but you can't be sure until you return to the start and wait outside with what consequences pull us apart.
Next up on the stage, we have a critic, writer, poet, man of letters, always very well turned out, Mr. Charles Stark, please.
Any of that. I'm not deserving any of that, but in a sense, I have two short poems here. One is my own, and the other is quite long. And I thought, I don't know which order to read in it. Clearly, he deserves pride of place.
But is pride of place first or second? That's the question, isn't it?
That is the question. Does he hold it up or put it down, as it were? The swans depart, poet on his belly with binoculars, while ten swans rise from the lake. Someone had given the game away. Who would do that to Michael Longley? That's mine. This is a much more subtle and the longer I've looked at this, the more I've found it interesting. It's called Arrival. It is as though David had whitewashed the cottage and the gateposts in the distance for this moment, the Hooper Swan's arrival, while you, wide awake in your white nightdress at the erratic boulder, counting through binoculars. Oh, what a day it is, this October. And how many of them are there? And to think that I once gave a party with his wife.
I told you he was a man of letters, but Simon. It's on the magazine. It's a, we can bring him talking about it. Mary O'Connell.
This is a kind of a global warming poem. It's called Meltdown. But it's, well, short. Snow burrow deep, bears sleep. Spring begins to crack. Wedges of ice shear off, slice an agitated sea. Pearl sheen sweeps to puckered edge. Under rush of streams, ice flows, sails drifting on glass, crumble stealthily. Cobalt shadows bite into a fragile, shimmering expanse. Shrinking wilderness, naked in the glare of a sinister sky. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike?
I'm here, is there Mike?
Yeah.
Is there somebody ahead of me? No? Mm-hmm.
Hold it, Satan is back.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm just discombobulated now by the your reappearance. Please, come up then.
Apologies for absence. Two very short poems written in Daya as part of a weekend. The five haikus I read last week were part of the same sequence. Early summer's setting. The cloud does press ups on the top of Puig. The smokestack bulge glows golden grey as the sun wreathes the sandstone peaks in a ruff of burnished metal, fringed in part by the cloud's beard. The distant horizon in the sea beyond the Kala begins to tinge in a pinkish wash as evening draws closer and light springs its last ola before sweeping itself invisible as dusk calls for the star's presence. And one coming home the same night, called at night, heading home. The citrus fruit breeze of Mediterranean night brushes flowers closed and open, overriding scents of jasmine and herbs, redolent of well-cooked meals, fresh and pungent. The brook, early summer mild, burbles bursting on stone in its rush to meet the bay. Night birds banter, chirpy chatter plays treble to the bass of sheep. The street lamp shadows show gecko shadows lifelike through the opaque glass in contrast to the giant at my feet lumbering before me. Climbing the hill, steeper than I remember, in the wine-fueled satisfaction of a hearty lunch. The stream, now adjacent to the road, absorbs all other sounds. And only the sense remain. Thank you.
Beautiful lyrics, Simon. Thanks so much. Max, thanks very much.
Committing Harry Carrigan. After him, I'm sorry, I'm not sure before me, but anyway, I'll give you a short one and just a few words about someone that passed away on Saturday, if you don't mind. Cliche, my struggles with trying to do my poetry. I am one walking cliche, thinking in iambic, pentameter, staccato, vibrato, malato, cum molto, a thundering hamiameter. I must malrhyme and bump it out with words of bone notation. I need to hop and skip some words on a corny, sticky vibration. Somehow I just can't seem to control this metronome in my head. It's worse than any corny gnome. This meter isn't slid. Please teach me how to miss a beat and churn out funky verses. My aptitude for cacophony is going from bad to worse. It comes out pouring in a rush, a torrent done at speed. I just can't seem to get control of this mitchy-matchy need, and that is the truth. It was a very, very simple poem, but someone close to me died on Saturday. There's a lot of talk about it, but for me, he was my cousin. And I loved him, and I played with him. I swapped his farm, and then he had to play with some division. So, this is called Hot Sausages in the Meadow. There's a lot of sausage and lashes around this weekend, so this is my effort. Hot juicy sausages, snuggled in a mattress roll of melted, buttered, warm brown bread. That's what you carry down to the sun-speckled meadow. A primitive early sausage roll. Then, in another hayloft, waiting till you could pitchfork more straw so that we could hone our high dives and bounces. a 60s trampoline. Then, after threshing, you made us my waddy and brought us Marietta biscuits with jam, our early version of Mikado, Mikado. Roasted apples in the aga at Gortland Hour, dipped in golden syrup, a first toffee apple. A little pamploma of mad heifers stampeding behind preschool girl. No squash tomatoes, though. Miriam was cooked to safety by our little pea superman. Then whizzing by, dancing at marquees, spinning in jives, early performance of Strictly. A rally driver and a rally lover waited at hairpin bins for hand-rake turns on the South Lake Road. Sure, that's illegal, or Jordan. A happy hit, grover and easy. You rescued power lines from the storm's clutches. MacGyver. Then with your son to watch, I think I might have to speak the person. Icarus too close to being a famous pole, a boggy grey hillside in Edgerbone. There lay for 6 hours, another will walk his April ride up the aisle. You never had a bad day, nothing diminished your smile. New beams, new high wires. That's me.
Thanks so much for that. Very moving. Very moving. Patricia Watt, please.
Very quick one, called Vignette. My one false love lives, lurks in daylight, fumbles away to fortune. Elation to reach a point where we can cry no more, and more and more will be given, since no one is rewarded if I watch alone.
Thanks, Rachel. And next we have Cathy Darcy with a 200-page poem about the Camino.
Very funny. I actually am going to read some of it. But like less than one page, all right? this is an extract from a long poem. The kind of justice is worth seeing, the whole town smells. Last night, something like pig slurry descended on Montana's, enveloped us not unpleasantly. I think you didn't sleep, neither of us did, for fear of falling. At 5 a.m, you whispered goodbye through the toilet door, a red-eyed ghost. I must leave here, I suppose. I don't know why. A good day, there's nothing. And Castroyer is, you call over here, the fruit is free. I accept your luscious plum. I met you before, Hilario. I will give you advice. Bring food, pack once, don't move. Put weight at the base, keep close. 1 liter of water. Buy bread, not that, it's too late now for most things. Steal toilet paper, knives, you will need 2. Get a stick, and stay with the woman who thinks that your hair is beautiful but not your face. Tostada, cafe. I think that the smaller it is, do we love each other? Please come on my tits. I did fuck up. And there's too much Spanish, but you say, hey baby, I like your jeans. I read poetry, I'm really fucking clever. Feel my hairy legs. Stay away, you fucker. 29. The song I sang at our wedding. Lottie is on a swing in Isaray de Vega. Lottie is asleep in a ditch outside Bodilla, wondering if she is lost, if her ankle will work. We will never see her again. A father and son, doe-eyed child. This town is strange, though. I must go on.
Next we have the current 5-word laureate. I use that word a lot. Ned Harriet, please.
Reasons to be cheerful. This is very derivative, and it's doggerel. It's based on something Joe O'Connor had on the radio, and I'm just giving it a bit of a Cork twist and updating it, so some of you may have heard this before. Reasons to be cheerful. Lately we were worried, we need advice. We were boomtown rats, now poor as church mice. Pissed off, anxious, broke and fearful. But hang on now, there's reasons to be cheerful. There's Cullen's Kicks on the radio. Daniel Day-Lewis, Writers at Listowel reading to us. Johnny Spillane in the Long Valley Bar. Murphy's Beamish, Rory G on guitar. Van the Man's Moondance and Seamus Heaney. Munster Rugby, The Opera House and Puccini. All Fellas in Pubs, Boozing and Blatherin'. The Great Frank O'Connor and Enright's The Gathering. Elvis Presley singing Blue Suede Shoes, When There Ain't No Cure for the Wintertime Blues. Great feckin' poems on a bank holiday Monday, Cork and Kilkenny and Croker some Sunday. Remarkable plays by Donal Creedon, O'Vale's Open Mic Poetry Reading, Dawn Over Alhees, The Cliffs of Dunaan, Sean Keane's rendition of Revenge for Skibbereen. You may travel far from your own native home, but where would you find a cabin of home? And sweet treasure for all, if only we want it, a riverside walk we take for granted. Hear Muddy Waters singing, Got My Mojo Working. Read a few bit of Joyce or a poem by Paul Durbin. Read Marion Keyes, see a play by Beckett. Read Edna O'Brien, or sure the Bible, sure feck it. We may as well do it, since books can be cheap, and they can't stop us reading, so either smile or weep. Vinci or Banville, whatever you feel. Jerry Murphy or Phoenix or Brian Friel. So it ain't all bad, there's reasons to chuckle. Des Bishop trying a couple of fuckle. There are ways now to bypass the banks. Party politics, useless. No thanks. The feckin' government is out of touch. Whoever's in office don't matter much. Recession, depression, the figures, the facts. The stuff they can't touch, stuff they can't tax. They would if they could, but they can't, so they're peaked. They're hurried, they're worried, they're phased, they're freaked. Because we laugh out loud at their farcical ambition. We do what we want. Don't need their permission. Or be told how to vote by irrelevant fellas. Listen to Martha and the Vandellas. Summertime's the time for dancing in the streets. We'll still be here when they lose their seats. When our dads were young, there were hungry years. There were slums in the cities, emigrant tears. So the boom's now bust, but we ain't going back. We won't be depressed, it's not all that black. Yeah, we live in a country where it howls and it pours. But we don't have tsunamis, no more bloody wars. No famine this time, just a mountain of debt. The spooks don't waterboard us, at least not yet. There's Crane Lane, Munster Lips, the Lark in the Park, the cheeses in Fota, beach fires in the dark. We're not back in England at the time of emergence of Maggie, Thatcher and the Tory resurgence. The troubles are over, there's peace in our homes, and Martin McGuinness is writing poems. The Reverend Ian swallowed his pride and showed a friendly, more feminine side. The polls are going, the strain on the purse, but all things considered it could be worse. We're a shook up, mixed up post-Tiger nation, sorely in need of some consolation. But just look around, you see it's all here. A kiss at midnight on Dingle Pier. Our loved ones, our families, our kids, our mates. The National Library's exhibition on Yeats. There's the Jazz Festival, we won't be downhearted. Hurricane Darwin roared in and departed. There's West Cork in summer and the National Museum. We've reasons to be cheerful, you just have to see them. Sinead, thanks.
Agus nish quirky fault there with Julie Fields in the board.
To conform or not to conform. Conformity is a deformity of human evolution, a pollution of progress, an invisible few putting pressure on you to live your life as they see fit. Forget about IT, you want to be an it girl. And boys, you play with those toys that reaffirm your masculinity. Put down the pots and pans from your sister's kitchenette. Throw a grenade in the oven. Because at the end of the day, it's the real men who get the loving of the trophy princess in a constant state of distress. For not only is she unable to find her way home, she cannot find herself. Yet she defines herself through labels and brands, obsessively self-tanned showing Bobby Sands' hands. And it's no wonder this damsel is in distress, for each time she undresses, a whispering chorus of magazine quotes swarms her aura. A zombie gaze, Aurora Borealis green, can be seen as her fingers play the scales on her ribcage.
her young daughter watches from the bedroom door, mimicking the woman she adores. Intergenerational insecurities pass through bloodlines, but there is always a black sheep. The one who questions boundaries, who challenges cosmologies, who refuses to bow to conformity. And I feel we need these odd ones out, for without them we are carbon copies, stereotyped in docile black and white, packed neatly into boxes. I want to see a transgender Rosa Tralee, a hairy biker Montessori teacher, a frenzy bouncer, a bouncy castle bouncing gay couple celebrating their child's birthday. A breastfeeding, comic-reading mother sitting alongside her sister, whose decision not to procreate or settle down does not leave her sitting around drunken relatives at weddings asking awkward questions. Suggesting Johnny at the bar has an ex-wife, Francie Karen, outdoor jacuzzi. I mean, has anyone even asked Johnny, does he want to remarry? You're just assuming. I want to meet a bird-watching, hop-splashing tattooist without any tattoos. See a pincushion-faced Nemo reading the news. A model in a wheelchair, imperfection being the new black. But along comes the DSM and attacks our identity, labelling us nonconformists mentally ill, proposing to cure us with a pill, or at least airbrush away our ideas, then patent them as their own. But I live in hope, my nonconformist seed has been sown.
Could follow on from that, I wonder. Maybe Mr. Richard Hawtrey?
Poem is called At the Burning of Sappho's Poems, AD 1073. Flames wave like dark curls loosened by island girls, each rounded ink trace slipping free with carnal sighs, tongues of light tease the margins of taut calf skin. Sappho is ablaze, her offshore lips sizzling and spitting into albed laps. Charred strokes settle on anise and dalmatic, while sparrows scatter to their moonlit roost. And this last poem is called Pied à Terre, Footfall, from Catullus, poem 68a. Alius gave us his assistance, turning trespass into open access. He secured both maisonette and mistress, a shared bolt hole to school our eager loves. Hear the soft tread of my shining goddess searing the threshold with her white hot foot poised at our door. The urgent tinnitus of her crisp sandal sprang across the house.
The urgent tinnitus of her crisp sandals. Wow. That's a good one. Sally, please.
Thanks, buddy.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Okay. Tonight's a big night. I'm coming out. I'm attending here for over a year reading kind of poetry, but I'm not really a poet, and I often feel like a charlatan, and what I really do is prose. So between October 2010 and October 2012, I had kind of a mad notion, and under a moniker called One Short Story to be Told, I released 6 books, each of which is only one story in it, and each of which is only one copy of. Kind of borrowing on an old idea, that whoever received the book would read it, put some comments in the back of it, give me some feedback. It's getting complicated now, isn't it? And I created a blog, and you know, it's a mad modern world, so there's a Facebook page and a Twitter page, although the Twitter page isn't really operational because 140 characters just doesn't do me, as you can tell, because I'm rambling at this stage. So anyway, that's the idea. There's 6 books out there, and each has its own story, and if there's only one copy of the book, the idea is to keep the story alive by passing it on, and I track it on the blog. I'm going to read, although I shouldn't, because it's kind of top secret, the story that's contained in the last of those books, which is called Home. You'll be delighted to know it's less than 1,000 words. 997 is the exact word count for those of you who just can't say. And before I start, I should say 2 things. This is not autobiographical. Well, it is to a degree, but not the really dodgy bit in the middle, which carries a health warning. There's a bit of sensitive subject in there. There's a criminal in my house at the moment. Roused from my afternoon slumber by his voice, that is the first thought to enter my head. It feels odd to consider him that way. He doesn't look like a man who would trouble the law. He's too small and slight. But the thought refuses to be ignored, and eventually the insight it provides repels the fear that crawls across my body at the sound of his voice. It feels odd, I realise, to feel the fear of the black, heavy tide he always provides subsided. But it's thrilling too, and I feel suddenly alive. I hear his voice again, and the ebbing tide slows, but there is no trembling in my hands, no knot in my stomach. I can feel the terror that feeds those trembles and knots lurking on the periphery, but with it there is something new, a resolve to take some action. Once I have identified this new emotion, my mind whirls. I can call the police, I think. They will prosecute him. And then I see him stood before a judge and jury, hear the guilty verdict being handed down, hear myself hissing, criminals should be punished, when asked for a victim statement. I smile at the bravado of that statement, wanting to believe it, and yet. Downstairs, his voice is moving from room to room. He's singing, I realise. I wonder why. Has he received good news? Or is he looking forward to something? Something involving me. The fear blackens, as it always does when I think he may visit my room. But the revolve to take some action is still whispering in my ear, and that helps take my mind off the fact he may come up the stairs. I wonder instead why he is here. He should be somewhere else. Where, I can't recall. But not here. This is my safety period, my time alone, my time without fear, a time when I think about life after I escape. I wonder suddenly if I didn't, as I thought, wake as soon as he was back in the house. Perhaps he's already been in my room. Maybe he stood over me, watched me breathe, smiled, touched me, stroked my hair, whispered my name. I shudder as those thoughts marry with images of previous visits, that knowing look in his eye, his voice thick with lust saying, hi honey, his whiskey perfumed breath, his wart-riddled hands, and the fear that erupts when he touches me begins to rumble. I despise that fear. I despise it for keeping me here. I despise it because he controls it. But I despise it most of all because it prevents me doing what I promised to do when my parents died. It can't be that hard to be good, I've told myself every day since he brought me to this house. But it must be, if I'm still failing 8 years after the accident. I hear his footsteps on the stairs. Panic crushes my heart. And as I always do at the last moment, I turn to God for help. Please God, let him pass, I pray. Just this time. Just this once. But God, as always, isn't listening. I sense him at the door, feel his shadow fill the room. Fear grips me hard, and everything from now on I know will be cloaked in its shadow. He plops his frame on the bed, fingers my neck, whispers my name, tells me I'm a good kid, and all I can think of is my parents and an unlistening God. I've missed you, he mutters as he slips under the covers. I feel his body relax, though one part remains hard, feel his excitement accelerate. The words that always precede the pain he inflicts, stay quiet, honey, I won't hurt you, slithers into my ears. Darkness begins to close. His breathing hastens. His whispered lies become mumbled, urgent demands. My breath is saturated in sweat and whiskey. The hurt of previous visits thunders in my head, and guilt churns violently in my stomach. But all of that is erased when his hand slips to my waist. Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned, I mumble as black ice spreads across my mind. But the Lord knows me and howls his disapproval. Sinner! I pray harder, Hail Mary full of grace, pray through his shouts of confess. The Lord is with thee, but his voice rises, blessed are thou, and he screams, confess, confess to Almighty God. My head spins. I hear myself whining, begging for forgiveness. I hear the devil hiss, I cannot be saved, that I am evil, black, unforgivable. And I hear his voice flame in my ear telling me I'm a good child, a sweet child, his precious child. I dive into the blackness, pull myself away from the evil being thrust upon me, pull myself away from his promises, his hands, his sweat, his body. The voices slowly lose their power, and then it's just me, whispering the words our Father gave us. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Deliver us from evil. Deliver us from evil. Deliver us from evil. I pull again. I pull until only a tiny white light breaks the darkness. I pull until even my voice is a distant hum. And then I scrabble to the furthest most corner of the dark, where I know from experience he cannot reach me. Finally, there is silence. I have reached the point where there is nothing. No one. Not even me. Just hopelessness. And that tiny, tiny light that refuses to go out. Thank you. Oh, and I should have explained, it's gone under a pen name, Late Nattens, and that's him. Thank you.
We have two people left. We have one person left. Matthew Sweeney, please.
Elegy for Seamus Heaney. Took me 6 months to write this. 7 failed attempts. Kept going back to it. Felt I had to get this fucking right, or not at all. I've got it right. Into the air. I think I'll forget the concelebrated mass around your coffin. The way those priests claimed you as a starry one of their own. And the high choral singing meant to lead you through the diamond-studded gates of heaven, where you'd sign books for God. I'll forget, too, the way that crow of a bishop had to have the last word by croaking out some creepy Latin hymn, although you liked Latin, straight after your piper played an unearthly slow air to guide your coffin down into that hole in the ground in Belahi, your own place, where 2 nights later a harpist was found playing to you in the dark as if you'd invited her there to set everything right. I'll remember that, and the piper's lament, and your dairy voice, and your laugh, and yes, maybe a poem or two.
Did I forget anybody?
Yeah.
Oh, get up. Thank you for that. Corkundrum, it's called. At the pub the other day, I overheard two old regulars talking, clung to their stools. Finbar, do you fancy a riddle? No, I'm sure I will. Sure, I'm no fool. I'm something that opens eyes wide with delight. Definitely sought out most every night. The exit from which the whole world marches out. I have four lips, but they do not pout. Sometimes there's grass and sometimes there's none. If I'm greeted by something, eyes it has one. When a language is spoken, it is but one tongue. A bird can cause an itchy hell, and the other 6 days you hope to see me as well. What am I? Well, I've taught it true, and I'll have a punt. You're Jeremy, I think you are.
I'll come back
to the answer later. JWS, please.
He works in the shadow factory. He works in the shadow factory, turning the valves of the enormous tank. He watches the negative tons of raw shadow through the safety of a porthole. On the way to the works canteen, he passes the assembly line. Thousands of aerosols full of shadow rattle along the conveyor belt. It is the middle of summer, the factory's busiest time. The aerosols are stamped with the warning, for daytime use only. From the canteen window, he sees trucks leaving the factory gates. As he glances at his newspaper, he notes the latest public concern. A spokesman for the factory is quoted in the paper. The spokesman says that shadows occur routinely in nature. Even a newborn baby has a shadow. After work, he places his overalls into the mouth of an incinerator. Before leaving the building, he washes in the communal shower. He works in the shadow factory, turning the valves of the enormous tank. At night, he sleeps with the light on, all the shadows of the room in their rightful place.